Today on the Av Podcast, we break down the first third of the NBA season, the first trimester, if you will. I welcome Ryerson alumnus and Sports Hall of Famer Jan Michael Nation as we dive into the early success of the Toronto Raptors season, the parity between many of the NBA teams this season, how the three ball has played into that parity, and Jimmy Butler, and a whole lot more. We broke down the show into two pods. We initially recorded this on December 6th for about, roughly, I would say about 2.5 hours, I would say. So you got to make sure you look out for part two tomorrow, which will be released within 24 hours of this one. South Sharif is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. As always, you can listen and subscribe to all episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher under the South Shore Ave name. Make sure you check it out. Rate the shows as well. Thank you. And to also listen, subscribe, and to go through my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's the Ave Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio. Let's go.
Welcome to the Ave Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Welcome to the Ave Podcast. Today we welcome back one of my favorite guests. And since the inception of this podcast, I've usually tried to break down the NBA regular season in three parts before we get to the playoffs. And I brought back this guest to reprise his annual role during the first trimester of the season. He's a former professional overseas basketball player, a Rye High alumnus, aka Ryerson University alumnus, who's made it into the Rams Hall of Fame. That's right, he's a Hoffa. And and I like to think that everyone in this life has their own superhero theme music. So if you close your eyes and you try to listen out for the theme music of this next guest, if you listen real close, you can hear Coffee Brown singing about the after party. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the podcast.
Oh, man. You're one of a kind, man. You don't do this to no one else, but you do this to me, man. You do this to me every time. All right, man.
I do this to everybody, man. I do this to every damn buddy.
I don't think so, man. I think you gotta smile on your face. I can hear you smiling as you read it, guy. Holy. Oh, you're too funny, man.
Yo, ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the podcast, please welcome back Jan Michael Nation to the show. What's going on, yes, sir?
Yes. Thank you for having me. It's been a while, but I appreciate our conversation talking about the game that I love the best, the most, I should say. Yes.
No, for sure. Without a doubt, man. Without a doubt. I'm sorry. I worked hard on that intro, man. I felt proud of it while I was writing it, man. You're an R&B dude, man. I want to give respect to the fact that you're an R&B dude.
Listen. I laugh because you got me, man. You called me out, man. That was one of my songs, man. Come on now. You saw me on the dance floor.
I really did.
Yep. That was my jam, man. But, man.
They did their thing. Coffee Brown did their thing for a little
they
bit.
They did their thing, man. One song, one hit wonders, man. But that was a jam.
That was straight. That was straight. It was always them mixing in with Next. You always heard Next come.
Yeah. Exactly.
good times. Just to start this off, I was going to start about the parity in the NBA and everything else, but I think we should talk about the most important factor this season. Let's talk about Dwight Howard.
Oh wow. Sure.
No, I'm not gonna do it.
Okay, thank you. Ooh, I was like, oh, I wasn't prepared for that one.
Neither was I. All right, so before we address the whole NBA season being the fact that we live in the GTA, I gotta reference the Raptors first. At least jump into that factor first. The fact that they're 21-5 as of this recording. The last game they played was against Philadelphia. Kawhi Leonard's been looking real good. I think physically this is probably the best he looked. But my question is, what's your biggest takeaway from the Raptors' success this season so far?
What has impressed me, the off season. I think the trade was what started this whole this wave. A lot of people are upset because they fired Dwayne Casey and Deron DeRozan, but it's one of those trades that you don't get a once in a lifetime generational player, especially within the top three in the NBA talent. Yeah. So I admire the gutsy call to fire to pull the trigger on the trade. But one thing we got to take into consideration, Toronto was already a contending, championship contending team. All they did was change the coach as well as the top player. Let's face it, I'm going to toot my horn right now. I was from your first podcast, I said Dwayne Casey is the great regular season coach.
Yeah.
The Raptors will always be in the top, either number two seed or number one seed, hanging to the playoffs. But when the playoffs hit, they drop to a four seed. And it's because of it's the playoffs. You're playing one team. Opponents are game planning against you. My thing with Dwayne Casey was he was not a good – he didn't make great adjustments during the game.
Right.
And it really hurt his teams, and they weren't prepared. And it showed in the back-to-back sweeps to Cleveland. That was unacceptable. So change had to happen. Now that Kawhi is here, I am very impressed with him. I'm impressed with the team. I didn't think it would click this quickly,
right,
to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed with that. Nurse has stepped. It's like a seamless process. He stepped in like as if nothing, like no change.
Mm-hmm.
He's clearly a better offensive coach
than
Casey is.
Although Casey would like to think differently of that, but
I think Dwayne Casey's calling card is more in the defensive end. He's a great defensive strategist.
Definitely.
And so I'll give him that. That's his calling card. But when it comes to making adjustments to the game, teams are going to be preparing, watching game film on your plays, and it's all about execution, and it's all about making. Limiting isolation plays. So if you have a strong system, it will hold you, take you through a good three quarters of the game, and the fourth quarter is when your star players come into the fold, right?
Right.
So Kawhi, Kyle Lowry, they're making big plays. Also another factor of the trade was Danny Green. Unbelievable player. Huge pickup.
Steal.
He's another two-way player. He can shoot the three. Plays great defense. He's championship pedigree with Kawhi. That's a win-win. And you can just see their impact on the team. It's just a different mindset, a different belief.
When it comes to Danny Green now, NBA players have a way of playing great in their contract year. Although I wouldn't put him in that category because he always plays hard.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, coming to a new city, because when he was in San Antonio, he was a very good role. Played very well for them. Considering his role, he played very well for them. But he was kind of like, especially in the prime of his Spurs career, he was Popovich's whipping boy. So I think, yeah, you know, coming to a new team, it's a motivation to show what kind of a leader that you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that's really been good for him. On mm-hmm. top of, you know, coming with Kawhi and kind of changing their energy defensively. Like, although they're always good defensively, but in the playoffs, you know, things would happen, and you know the whole story with that. But
yeah.
But I think, like, they've their identity on defense has been, like, from day one, you know what this is.
You know
what I mean? And it's only going to get better because, obviously, like, as I said before, like, Kawhi's, he's getting his sea legs. Like, you can see it now. Like, that last game, you can see, like, he's getting his explosion. This is the best that he's looking. It's only going to get better once that mm-hmm. Russell mm-hmm. officially shakes off. Like, I can't wait to see what he's going to be like after the All-Star break and, mm-hmm. you know, once, mm-hmm. Once the playoff chase starts coming down and, you know.
I think my only thing is they're at a great team, but we're still in the first trimester of the season. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of games to be played.
Right.
health is a huge factor. Let's hold, calm down, and we'll let things unfold. To say they're definitely a contender, but the playoffs is a different beast. I think they have, this is the, probably the strongest team they've ever had, and I'm very confident they'll do well in the playoffs, but they have to, they still have to build. The team is not at, it's not firing on all cylinders yet.
Right.
And that's the craziest thing about it, and they're still dominant. I still think they have other levels to reach, both defensively, offensively, building more cohesion amongst the players. Mm-hmm. You can tell they pretty much gel off the court. You can tell they enjoy being around each other.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing as well.
And that's great for Kawhi, considering that he's you're trying to woo him, right? So to make him feel at home, I think it's huge, especially for his kind of personality.
This scenario is the perfect situation. He's not really a person that likes the limelight. And Toronto is like a hidden gem worldwide, recognized worldwide. This situation is perfect for him. This is a no-brainer. I will be surprised if he leaves. If he leaves, I will be surprised.
This has been my theme from the summertime. I'm like, and I even said in the last podcast, I'll say it again. Part of the reason why I'm going to be shocked to see him leave is, again, you're leaving another $50 million on the table. Somewhere else. And you add that with the money you already left on the table with San Antonio, that's $80 million. How can you leave $80 million on the table? Like, money's not everything, but come on, man. Yeah. Money's got to be about something.
He's a smart young man. He's got good people around him. I think he realizes he could be the king of the East, and there's so much options on the table, playing in LA. He can control it. He's definitely in control of what happens next, but Toronto is a good, very good situation for him. And I could just see he's getting better and better, more comfortable. He never talked before. You can see he's expressing showing a little bit more of a personality.
Mm-hmm.
So it's. I think the city is definitely growing on him.
Yeah, and by all accounts, you're hearing that he does. You know, he's embracing the city. Like, he definitely likes it. Like, winning helps, of course. But
of course, yeah.
You know, but
yeah.
but he's definitely appreciating the love of the city so far. I tell you, like, I think the biggest takeaway for me, like one of the biggest takeaways, is how well Kyle Lowry's been playing.
Yeah,
you're looking at him right now. He's averaging 15 and 10. You know, 4.5 boards.
Yeah.
He's giving you.
He's more of a complete player now than he was before. I think he's. Yeah, remember, he's not a spring chicken. He's been around.
Right.
And I think I got to give credit to, obviously, being beside Kawhi, playing alongside Kawhi creates a lot of openings for him.
Mm-hmm.
But the offense, he wasn't putting up these numbers. He's scoring less, but he's more impactful.
He's controlling the game more.
Exactly. Right. And he wasn't doing that. He would do that in spurts. And then he'll gas out by end of the season playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What impressed me with the Raptors is also the second unit, the bench mob.
Yeah.
There's not much of a drop-off when they go to the bench. Van Vliet, Wright, all those guys. Like, it's not much of a drop-off from the bench, especially defensively. Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's funny. Like, I'll shout out to Brian from one of my runs that I'm in. But he gave me this nugget on Sunday, which I'm gonna steal this point from him and add it to the podcast. Sorry, Brian. I think that, like, being in that 1-1A role with DeRozan, like, they handled it as best as they could, but judging on how they lost their playoff games, like, you feel like it might have been too much for them, but. And this situation where, you know, being a clear number two with Kawhi being the man, it's kind of freed him up in a lot of ways.
Okay, like, so you're saying guys are buying into their roles, everyone, yeah, from top to bottom.
Yeah, like before it was like a 1-1A, and when those pressure hits, I don't know if he's, you know, he kind of proved that you're not totally sure if he's built for it. In terms of being the number one guy, I mean, this is what I mean.
Okay, fair enough. I agree on that aspect, yes. But I disagree because I think there's more contributing factors to why they flamed out in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I think they weren't prepared.
Right.
Dwayne Casey didn't have them well prepared.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't make any adjustments. And it showed. Like, Tyronn Lue outcoached him under the table.
Yeah.
It was
bad. 3 years in a row, actually.
Yeah, 3 years in a row. I knew something. I knew he wasn't the coach that everyone was professing him to be during the playoffs when he lost to Brooklyn Nets, where they had Paul Pierce and KG and Joe Johnson and those guys.
And they went seven.
Remember, Jason Kidd was a rookie coach that year.
I know. And he got out coached.
And he was doing stuff out the box that kept KC guessing. And I know it went to game seven, but they had their opportunities, put the game away, put that series away before that. It got to that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Still impressed with Kyle Lowry. He's playing amazing. He's more of a complete player now. He's controlling the tempo. He's obviously a bulldog. He plays amazing. He puts pressure on the defensive guard. And but everyone from top to bottom has that workerman's mentality, and it just helps.
Yeah, no, I agree. Go ahead.
The only thing though is that their defensive rebounding is not the best.
Yeah, it needs to improve for sure.
I guess Ibaka's a great he could fill the role as a big man in a sense of on screen and rolls and covering guards and stuff. But when he's out of position, they're screwed for rebound.
Yeah, like rebounding has never really totally been his thing. You know what I mean? Like he's not a guy that's gonna get you like 15 boards on a night that you really need it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he's going to give you like 6-7 boards. You know, you're lucky if you get 10 some nights, you know what I mean? But like, it's just kind of who he is. It's funny. He's the other one that's really surprised me this season. I don't want to say that his casket was closed on his prime, but you were definitely preparing for it to go to his wake. You know what I mean?
Like,
I wasn't planning on wearing my black suit, but I was coming out with the black sweater and the dress pants combo. Yeah. Like, I was ready to go. I know
he didn't have a
speech.
Good year last
year. Oh, he was terrible.
And I think that bothered him, and he showed, like, he has a simple game. He's still got some athleticism. He has long arms and big hands. He can shoot the perimeter jump shot from time to time. That mid-range, what he's done now is bought into his role. He knows where he's going to get his shot. He's more comfortable. He's taking more mid-range shots instead of the deep threes.
God.
And he's attacking the basket more also. Even though he only goes right, he would never go left. And I laughed my ass off because I was like, as NBA players, you know who you're playing. You know the scout report. He only goes right. He'll up fake. He might go left. But it's one dribble, and he'll stop or pull up. Every drive he makes is to the right, and people fall for it
every time.
Yeah. All the time. Oh, my God. But it works, so I'll give it to the guy. Yeah, he's having a very good season.
Yeah, he's hopped out of the casket during the first trimester. Yeah. Like, it's weird. It's alarming to watch. Like,
yeah.
He's shooting with like 56% overall from the field,
yeah,
and
yeah,
80% from the line. Like, he's aggressive
in
the paint.
Because he's taking more that mid-range jump shot at the foul line. It's his shot. That's his range.
That was him
in
OKC
getting
though.
Open look.
That was that
it's
was
not
him.
Contested, eh?
No,
both of them are not contested. It's just open look.
But I mean that was his shot in OKC before he started eroding.
Yeah, but they weren't using him in that way. Like, that's once again coaching. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like the offense. They have screen and rolls. You have a good point guard that can get him the ball in his sweet spot. They have done that screen and roll. He pops. He picked and popped at the mid-range high post there. And he's hit some big baskets in crunch time. So hats off to the guy.
Yeah, and on top of that, he's reminding people that, you know, he does have somewhat of a post game too. Like I said, it's been all around impressive, man. You just hope he keeps this up for the entire season. He can maintain his health, but
you got to give it to the coach, though. I think you got to give it to Nurse.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a good philosophy. He changed things up. He made some tweaks that he thought would make the team more better, both offensively and defensively. Bringing JV off the bench was ingenious because he could just come in and just hit him. I thought in previous years they forgot about him.
Oh,
and only when he gave them an offensive rebound, they remembered, oh, he's on the team.
Yeah.
And
they used to ignore him. Especially in the regular season, it was deplorable at times.
Forget about the guy.
Yeah.
And it's just like, come on, coach. That's on you.
Yeah.
So you can see they feature him a lot more. He's more comfortable. He's bought into his role. And it's like all the way around. It's from the top to the bottom. Can I give it up to the coach? Kawhi Leonard for doing his part. Kyle Lowry. Everyone is chipping in. That's
Siakam jumped the level.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, very impressed with that young man. Mm-hmm. Very impressed. He worked on his game. He's in good shape. And you see, the only thing is, in the first trimester of the season, you'll get people off guard because you've seen them for the first time. Mm-hmm. We'll see the second, the third time, how he does throughout the tenure of the season, because it's a lot of games still to go. Mm-hmm. Right? So if he can maintain this, wow.
Yeah, and it's funny because I remember this summer, a lot of NBA players, you know, during the summer circuits and stuff and all the runs and the Rico Hines runs and stuff, like, a lot of players were talking highly of Siakam. They're impressed mm-hmm. how, like, just even during the runs, they're impressed how good he was, you know? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. you can see, like, it's kind of translating. Here's a question I'll ask you before we move on, though. When Casey got fired, did you help him pack, or did you Uber him to the airport? Like, how did it work?
I was not there when he got fired. I laughed my ass off because I didn't think they were going to do it. I knew change needed to happen. They plateaued. Dwayne Casey plateaued as a coach with that team. The message was not being retained, and it was going on deaf ears. And he wasn't, to go out, to set a franchise record in the regular season, to be going to the playoffs as a number one seed, but not be respected as a number one seed.
I know.
Cleveland lost games purposely so they could get to Toronto to get to the they knew that Toronto was they had that psychological edge over them, right? There's no way. That first game took their heart. I know they battled. All the games were pretty much competitive, but it was just like, it was just watching paint dry. It was just so painful.
But I think what made it worse, too, is they went 8-11 the rest of the playoffs, not including the Raptors series, right? I think it was 8-11. Was it?
Who's that?
Yeah, it was the Cleveland.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I believe they went, because they went 4th. Yeah, they went 8-11.
Cleveland was going as far as when you're in the Eastern Conference and you have that guy, LeBron James, that's an automatic bid to the conference finals at the very minimum, right? Mm-hmm. And he had his out-of-body experience during the Boston series. He had to carry them. Carried them the whole playoffs. Look what happened in Indiana. Indiana woke them up. They got the wake up call. So then when they came against Toronto, they're laughing because there's such a huge drop off in intensity, that defensive intensity. Like, they escaped Indiana.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, then they got Toronto. They ran through Toronto, and then they had to ramp it up again against Boston because Boston was well coached. And they got a whole bunch of guys, underachievers, that had no pressure on them. Right?
And they're well coached. They're well coached.
Yeah, well coached.
I think you Ubered Casey and his family to the airport. I am assuming that.
I'll say this much: he is a great. He's a good NBA coach. I'm not going to say he's horrible. He's a great person. It's just that the coaching window closes on you before you even can realize it. And sometimes you got to understand. You got to be able, as a coach, you're a leader of men. You got to be able to express your thoughts, your coaching philosophy, and make sure that your players believe in it and believe in you. And I think there's a disconnect between the players and the coach, and it's shown on the court.
Well, especially the playoffs, I think that was.
That was such a like. Once again, I was not a Raptors fan, right? I'm not a Raptors fan, and when they flamed out, I won so much money. First of all, I won so much money from that series. Secondly, it pissed me off because all the American outlets were just crapping on them.
Oh, yeah.
They just went off. And I was just like, I felt sorry for the fans, more so the Raptor fans who are so passionate. But man, you could see this, a real basketball veteran in the game who understands the game knows that this was the beginning of the end with that team last year.
Yeah.
This year is different, completely different.
Well, they still
have to prove themselves in the playoffs.
Yeah, I'll say this much. I think one thing you'll know for sure, I'm not going to guarantee that the Raptors are going to make the finals or anything like that, because I still think Boston's going to kind of shake itself out once they finally, like, I think right now they're starting to kind of realize where guys should be in terms of coming off the bench. Like, now Jalen Brown is going to be coming off the bench, and that's probably going to spark the unit more. So, like, there's going to be teams working out their kinks and stuff. It's still early. But what I will say is that if Toronto loses this season, if they don't make it to the finals, I believe because of Kawhi and because of Danny Green especially, and taking that pressure off of of Kyle being the, you know, the alpha A, like the 1A. Uh-huh. Now he's like a clear number two and he knows his role. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like if they lose now, it's not going to be because they flamed out or, you know, they shit the
bed. They just lost a better team.
Yeah, they just lost a better team. And you know, you can live with that. You know, like the last time they lost when they were supposed to lose, like at least in the manner that they were supposed to lose, was the 2016 conference finals.
Yeah,
like
that, because,
yeah, you knew they were going to win, but at least you can live with that.
I'm going to jump in. I got to cut you off. But I'm going to say this to you. That year was an anomaly for the simple fact that the Eastern Conference was so watered down. They lucked out because of the matchup that they had, and they got lucky. Then they got to the conference final.
And they almost lost. They almost lost against Indiana and Miami.
Yeah.
More so
Indiana, yeah.
And that was the first round. So that would have been devastating had they you know, like...
They almost choked. They almost flamed out because they're so up and down in that Indiana series. So up and down. Kyle will play good. DeRozan will play bad. Mm-hmm. DeRozan will play good. Kyle will play horrible. Bad.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
So, but like after that, it's just like, what happened? After that year, so they get to the conference finals. The next year, they get buzzsawed by Cleveland in the semis, and they get buzzsawed again. And back-to-back sweep to the same team.
Yeah.
The same result. But it's supposed to be a better team. Same result. Unacceptable.
Yeah.
And
at least the one in 2017, you can throw the excuse that guys were hurt and stuff. You can at least throw the excuse out there. Not saying Cleveland still wouldn't have mollywopped the Raptors, because I think they would have, but... You can, you know, Kyle missed like 2-3 games out of that series. You got to at least throw that out there. You know what I mean? Whereas last year, there's just no excuse. Especially, like, again, when Boston went with their, like, you know, without their best players and took them to the brink of game 7.
Yeah.
You know, with rookies, basically, like Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and those guys, you know, being their top scorers. I mean,
yeah,
you can't come back from that. It's just what it is.
If you have a strong system, it will get you to 35% of the game because you're playing, everyone's touching the ball, there's a rhythm, everyone knows their spot. And then when it comes to those heavy moments where it's the gut time, that's when the superstars come out and play, right? Mm-hmm. And the good teams buckle down on defense. So it's just one of those things, man. Yeah. I just didn't believe in it last year. But this is I got to give it to Nurse. Everything that he's doing is working. They're only getting better. They're beating the elite teams, and they're beating the teams that they should beat as just the one-offs. They're like, it's like they win like 4 or 5 games in a row, they lose one. And that's how it is. That's how it normally is. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, they're doing really well. Obviously, we're going to be following them throughout the year.
They're the best team by far in the league.
Yeah.
But Golden State's coming, getting into the rim. They're getting everyone back now. So we're going to see how that unfolds.
No, for sure. And, man, that was an awesome game they played last time when they played Golden State here. That was an awesome game.
Great game.
So, you know, we're here, of course, to break down the first trimester of the season. And we've done these episodes in different ways. So for this one, we're going to be shaking it up a little bit by doing our very super early season NBA awards. But first, it's kind of hard to ignore what's happening in the NBA so far, and I don't just mean the dedication to the threes. I'm just talking about the all-around parity as to what's happening so far in the league. It's almost reminiscent of like the NFL, where so much teams are just bunched up together in the standings, especially the Western Conference. I believe it's 5 or 5.5 games that separates the first from the 14 seeds after this recording. So with the season being 82 games, you know, I'm sure it's going to start to shake itself out of that somewhat, if not fully. But when you look at the NBA, why do you think this has been happening so far this season?
I think off season, all the moves. We had a lot of moves this off season. We had a lot of guys. Start with the big man himself, LeBron, switching from the East Coast to the West. You have Kawhi going from San Antonio to Toronto. You have Jimmy Butler going from Minnesota to Philadelphia. You got guys coming back from injuries. For the West Coast has always been tough. but I think teams are leveling up. They're getting better. So you're having more competitiveness from the from the pretenders and the regular season teams. So it'll be interesting to see. It's still early because, like, even teams like Houston and Utah and San Antonio that are normal staples in the playoffs are not in playoff contention, right? They're out of the top eight. Mm-hmm. But I think in, like, a month time frame, I think that will change.
Yeah.
Teams like Sacramento, I'm very impressed with Clippers and Denver right now because they've held on and they've maintained consistency of winning games that they should be winning.
Right.
And competing against the elite. So it's still early, but, you know, this is what the NBA is. This is why I think it's the best sport of all the power sports out there. This is the most exciting because we got so much parity in both conferences.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. You know, for me, I agree with most of your points. I think it's the NBA's been really tough, like, for a few reasons. I think, you know, just to add to what you're saying, I think there's been a surplus of talent that's flooded these teams in the last few years. It's kind of starting to change the league now. Mm-hmm. And not just the big market teams. Like, unrestricted free agents, they're heading to teams with the best situation, not necessarily the biggest markets.
Yeah.
And also, I think, too, the way the game is being played now, the fact that it's outside in, drives and kicks.
Yeah.
Like, the pick and rolls to get your bigs, you know, like, to be guarding a wing on the perimeter and having them move their feet defensively on the perimeter. Like, as opposed to just trying to find that pick and roll to basically get your big man the ball in the post. It's just, I think all of that is kind of changing the game a bit. It's making the foundation of your offense to find the best open three, you know, or a layup that's basically giving everyone a chance in games. You know, like everybody's getting a chance to basically make threes. When your game is is so dependent on threes, you give teams, you can blow out teams, but you also, if your shot's not falling, you give teams
a chance to come back on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's a lot of that's what's happening in some of these games.
Mm-hmm. You know? I definitely agree. The three-pointer is so, the game has evolved. We went from the running gunning in the 80s and 70s. To the more physical half-court bruising basketball in the 90s, and the game just started to transition in the 2000s, just picking up speed, faster pace and space, moving the ball, having athletic wings, having big men that could do multiple skill sets in passing and rebounding and getting steals and obviously hitting jump shots on the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
The game has evolved, and the coaches are evolving with it. So you're seeing more coaches trying to capitalize on the three-point shot and, like, you know, running people. Seeing it's interesting, all the different philosophies. You got teams like Sacramento with De'Aaron Fox, who's balling out of his mind right now
year. Yeah,
and very impressive.
And they got back on Nadovich.
But that's a young core. They're too young to know what's going on.
Right.
So, like, it's not real. I don't think they can. I just personally don't think they can maintain it. If they do, wow, the future is going to be crazy for them.
Yeah, yeah, because they're ninth right now in the West.
Yeah, they're right there.
Yeah,
right.
But they play hard.
But like, they play hard every game. They compete. Yeah. That's all you want, and they're getting valuable experience with their young core each game. Going through different scenarios where they're only going to help them going forward.
So what do you think about Popovich's comments that, like, he hates the three and that has killed the game? Like, do you think this is just like an old man in the dirty marina screaming, you know, the kids to get off his lawn? Or do you think there's some more truth to what he's saying?
I think there's some more truth to it because I think he sees the game going in a direction that is going away from one of his prime philosophies of, like, you know, ball movement, player movement.
Yeah.
Everyone touches the ball. Now it's like one or two passes up the floor within 2 or 3 seconds and we'll get the first available shot. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's different. And even watching this year with DeRozan on the team, he's balling out. Got to give him a shout out for that.
Yeah, he is.
But they're not winning.
Yeah, right? I mean, some of that is injuries, too, because losing DeJounte Murray
was definitely huge.
Because especially, like, their defensive linchpin, because they don't have a big that's protecting the paint. And you know, he's what was he, second team all NBA last year?
Yeah.
So like he's their linchpin, and losing him, they don't have a replacement for him.
Yeah.
So I think that's huge too. I don't think Popovich's off his rocker. There is some truth to the games. Like for me, I'll be honest, man. As much as I love watching basketball, there are some games, Jan, where I'm like, I feel like I'm watching a 3-point contest.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard to watch sometimes, man, because like when teams aren't hitting it, it's not a pretty game to watch.
It's not a pretty game to watch, yeah. And they're just jacking, and they're jacking, and you're seeing more big men shoot it.
Yeah. It's weird.
Look at Brook Lopez. I think
God.
He went the game. He went 0 for 10 from the 3-point line earlier this year. 0 for 10 from the 3-point line. Just the 3-point line.
And he didn't. He literally didn't shoot another shot inside
the 3-point line. Yeah.
And if you ever see him in person, he's massive.
He's a massive guy.
But mind you, I think he's probably happy for this time because, again, like he's never.
He can extend his career.
Well, you know what? Yeah. Well, not just that, but to me, I've always thought of him as being soft, like meaning like soft, he's never been a guy that's he's not his brother. Like his brother's more the guy that'll go and rip.
A bruiser,
yeah. Yeah,
the
he's never been a guy like you look at his stats. I don't think he's ever averaged more than like 5-6 rebounds a game his whole career. As big as he is, this guy is like a walking Sasquatch.
Yeah,
and
but he's soft.
He's soft. So this era now is friggin' beautiful for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's like Greek Freak, grab all the boards. I don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care. Like it's I find it hard watching him.
Same breath, he's also hitting at a record pace in his career. He's hit more threes in this year at this stage of the first trimester of the season than he has his whole career combined.
That just doesn't seem right, man.
Yeah, it doesn't. Like because he went from maybe shooting maybe 5 threes a season. I can actually hit these. I'm going to take these more often. Then he went into the lab, worked on it the last 2 or 3 years, and has become a viable. Let's face it, big men. Some of these guys are not used to covering guys on a perimeter, especially another big man.
Mm-hmm.
They're used to running back on defense, back into the paint, waiting for the guy to come down. But when the guy's trailing, going to hit a walk-off three by himself. Remember, no one's in his face. Right, he got 2 seconds to set himself.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good shot for him.
Yeah, it's incredible to watch. It's crazy. He's averaging 4 boards, Jen.
Yeah, I know.
It's deplorable.
That's nasty. That is nasty.
It's like, deplorable.
Someone has to talk to the guy, man. Crank call that guy. Yo, get some rebounds. Hang up. You know what I mean? Like crank call that guy or something.
Yeah, it's deplorable. It's deplorable. Who's your surprise team so far this year?
My surprise team was the Clippers. I had two. Clippers and Denver.
Denver? Okay.
Yeah. I didn't see them coming out the gates like this. I knew they'll be a playoff contender because they pretty much came down to the last game of the year last year, and they lost to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that burning, that feeling of losing, being so close, but coming up so short
motivated them
over the summer, and they have a chip on their shoulders, and there's nothing more gratifying than a group of guys who all buy into the same concept and have something to prove to themselves. Well, not to themselves, I think they believe themselves, but prove to the world that they have arrived, you know. So they impressed me. Murray, I knew from just being Canadian and watching him, what he does in Team Canada, and watching his career over the years, he's gotten better. You could tell he's had the belief.
Oh, yeah. He has that dog in him. You can see it.
Yeah, you can see it. The gentleman that plays it, too, what's his name? His name escapes me. Yes, I'm impressed with him. Steady, both ends. Plays good defense, takes good shots. Steady Eddie. Very impressed with him. And then Jokic.
Yeah.
Like the passing, like what he did in Toronto. I saw him do that wraparound pass.
Oh my God, 45-degree
angle. I'm like, where's this guy throwing that ball to? On point, in the shooting pocket, wet. I was like, wow.
And that's your big man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He. I think he's up there, and he's had 3 games in his career with 15 assists. A big man. That's unheard of.
Funny because, like, like Jamal Murray and Gary Harris, they're two scoring guards. But you can get away with it when you're running your
offense. You can get away with it when your big man is your facilitator, one of your main facilitators. And then you got the veteran in Millsap to sprinkle in there, right? Mm-hmm. So they got a good group there.
No, they really do. They really do. It's funny. My surprise team is the Clippers. I think just the way they've gelled together. They played really well. And they've been healthy, man. They've been really healthy. Like Gallinari hasn't missed any games, really. He's
averaging. I know that's unheard of. He's missed he hasn't played off
I know.
The last 4 he's been injury prone the last 4 or 5 years.
His whole career, he's been injury prone. He's averaging 19-6. He's averaging 44-46-94 splits. Like that's 44 from the field, 46 from the 3-point line, 94 from the charity stripe. I mean, you can't ask for better. I mean, it's not surprising. Production. He's a talented dude.
I love Gallinari. He's like 6'9", 6'10".
He's a big boy, man. He's a big boy. Big
and he's
boy.
Got good skills. He's got the motor on him. You can tell he's slowed down, but he's more methodical. He's always been a more methodical guy anyways.
Right.
But he used to catch a lot of people his rookie year, his first couple of years. Mm-hmm. Caught a lot of guys.
Oh, yeah.
But, it's good to see that he's back. But once again, Doc Rivers, he's got a group of blue-collar guys that buy into his philosophy. Then they got that young Canadian kid. Right. He's looking like
Alexander.
A gem. He's looking like a gem. He's flourishing.
Yeah,
he's actually
been going right along with the whole steal of the draft narrative for this season. Like he's getting production, and the thing that's impressive is that Doc has entrusted him on that role, because normally when it comes to rookie point guards, he wants nothing to do with them. They're always coming off the bench playing scarce minutes. You know what I mean? And he's entrusted him to start, basically, and basically run the offense, and he's been doing it well. He's a steady, patient, plays with poise, a lot of pace. Like, I love that about him.
No, he's steady, but he picks and chooses spots. He's never in a rush. He's always cool, calm, and collective. Very cerebral type. You could tell. He just sees the game. He's at a good speed. Yeah. He's only going to get better.
Yeah, all the time. Like you can never rush him, which I even at Kentucky, that's what I liked about him a lot. As he kept improving every game, it's like nobody can really get him off his spots. Like he gets to where he needs to go when he wants to get there. Yeah,
and that's it's just finishing the plays. You know,
and that's easier said than done, as you know. Yeah. Right. It's easier said than done. And then Tobias Harris too. Like I mean, I expected him to have a good year. He's playing probably better than I thought he would be. But again, I don't know if this is a contract year run, but but he is a good player though. He's averaging 22 and 8.
He's a steady good player that gives you consistency. Mm-hmm. He gives you good defense, high level above average defense, and he gives you above average offense. He's giving you he's averaging in the 20s, early 20s, like 21, 22 points per game, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So. And he takes good shots. He doesn't force anything. And they got a good thing going there, definitely.
Yeah, and Montrezl Harrell, like he's been like he's been a revelation this year. He's been a revelation this year. Like obviously again, this is the first trimester. I'm not totally sure this is sustainable. Like I think Denver is going to be sustainable in terms of keeping up this pace. Like I don't know if they're going to end up being the number one seed as they are right now, but I can see them finishing definitely in the top four. At this stage, they're just a really solidly built team, and as long as nobody goes down, I think they can maintain this. But when it comes to the Clippers, I'm not sure. I want to see if this continues by the All-Star break, to be honest with you, because they play so hard from the games that I watched though. Like it wouldn't shock me if they stay in the playoff picture, but where they are now, they're like the number two seed. Like I can't see them. Obviously, it's not going to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to stay there.
No, I don't. I think they'll make the playoffs, but I think they'll be like more or less a 6, 5, 6, 7 seed.
Yeah, yeah. I can see them floating with like a middle playoff spot, as you said.
Yeah,
I can definitely see that.
Like that first road game is going to be it's going to be on the road for them.
Yeah,
yeah.
I agree, but I mean, but for going back to the Canuck, like for Shai, like that's actually going to be a lot of. It's going to be a great, building experience. Like, this, Like, yeah, being exposed to this role and they're winning.
You can tell Doc is excited about this kid.
Oh, yeah,
He's just going to pour all this information, gave him all this information so he could take in. He knows the kid listens. He's a good kid. He keeps a good hand on his shoulders. So the future is bright for this young man.
And you know what? I mean, because people forget, like, everybody knows Doc Rivers played in the NBA, but Doc Rivers was a good NBA player. And he was kind of poised himself. He was a guy that would kind of like, he would dunk on you and stuff and get you. And everybody kind of gets forgotten a little bit when you play with Dominique. But but he was a solid point guard for a long time. So I wonder if he sees bits of himself in Shai as well. You know, and it's just kind of entrusting him with that too.
Yeah. But he's a tall, he's like 6'7".
He's a big point
6'7 point guard.
Yeah.
Right, so he definitely has when he grows into his body more, feels out his body more, that strength, wow, he's going to be a problem at the point guard position.
No, 100%. Now, who's your surprise player of this season so far?
I pick Pascal Siakam.
Okay.
I like the way he's been playing. His role on the team. I like the way he picks and shoots. He just goes, man. I like the fact that he has the green light to get a rebound off the rim and get that ball up and down that floor. And you can tell he's getting better. Passing isn't his forte, but he's making better decisions. Mm-hmm. So it's showing that he's growing as a player. I'm just impressed with the numbers. He's playing good defense. And he's hitting his open shot. Very impressed across the board.
And you know with him too, like the motor that he has, like it's something
the
that
motor
you can't
is
teach.
Unreal.
You can't teach that. Between that and his athleticism, because I think he might be the fastest power forward in the league. When he's in the open court, he is fast. You know, so I think between the combination of those two things and his skill set starting to catch up with those, you know, two assets right there, like it's definitely up to him. I've been surprised by him too. But yeah, he's been playing really well. I don't dispute that answer.
You got player of the week, man.
Yeah.
And that's not an easy task.
No, right? not when Kawhi's on your team.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
So that was quite impressive.
Yeah,
impressed that young man.
He's really been playing really well. I feel sorry for Jacopoto, man. They were like a duo.
And yeah, I know.
He's just languishing in San Antonio.
Yeah, I know. Like, he's getting blocked. Every time I see a highlight, this guy's getting blocked off the rim.
Mm-hmm.
It's growing pains. Growing pains of the NBA, man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you'll laugh at this answer, but you may like this answer. But to answer my own question here, I gotta say Derrick Rose, man. I'm stunned by Derrick Rose. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, man.
I've been shocked by how he's been playing this season, man. And you know what? Last year he did show you signs that I shouldn't be totally surprised, because he showed signs that he did have something. He still has something in the tank. It was a little less consistent, but like you saw flashes where you're like, oh, you know. And that's the thing with Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose, before he always ends up getting his season ending knee injury or surgery or whatever it is. He always shows you flashes where you're like,
Oh, shit, is he back?
It's a tease.
Yeah. I think with all the trials and tribulations of all the injuries, he's finally got himself to a spot where he feels comfortable. Mm-hmm. He's more comfortable in his own skin, and he's at a calm place in Minnesota, and you're just seeing him just breathe. He's just breathing on the court. Yeah. And it's just like, it's like now he's not finishing at the rim with the dunks. He's finishing at the rim with finger rolls, teardrops, step back, jumpers. He's in the three consistently. He's playmaking. He still has that first and second step of explosiveness.
So fast, though.
So, this is the speed that he could play at where he could still be effective. Because before, it was just 100 miles per hour, all out. And his legs gave out on him.
Yeah.
It wasn't conducive for a longevity, that style of play. And, you know, I gotta commend him for the heart and the dedication from all the rehabs and all the injuries that he had to keep coming back and to keep believing in himself. Because I can only imagine
his
confidence, how draining it is. Because many people have gone through that and just said, you know what, I'm done. This guy, he wouldn't allow himself to quit. I respect that.
Well, he almost did last year. He almost did.
Yeah.
I couldn't blame him because I'm like, yo, when you know, like, especially when you've nibbled at that kind of success, especially that early, and then like you end up being at a position where if he would have finally shut it down, he'd be the only MVP in NBA history that doesn't make the Hall of Fame. You know, and I mean, I don't think he will, but I mean, look, the guy's averaging 18 a game. Off the bench, Jen. Off the bench.
Yeah,
like
but it's a perfect role for him.
Oh, no, of course.
It's a perfect role for him, right?
Of course.
It's coming off the bench, no pressure. He gets to score and facilitate. Now there's no pressure for him to be a starting point guard to deal with all the pressures of putting out the big numbers, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So it's a good situation, good scenario for him where he can just ease into the game and do his thing. Very impressive him.
Shooting 50% from three. I mean,
that's impressive.
Like, I think he's like, you know, to touch on what you're saying, like he's learned from his injuries to the point where he's playing more measured. He's not depending so much on his athleticism, and he's definitely has a better outside shot, which is what was missing from pretty much his whole career up until now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll be honest though, like the funny thing is when he comes on the floor. I don't know if you caught a lot of Wolves games this year, but a lot of times he looks like, even when Jimmy Butler was there, a lot of times he looked like he was their best player. And the thing is, I'm not totally sure if that's a great thing if you're trying to be a playoff contender, to be honest with you.
But
a lot of times when he comes on the floor,
he just changes the game.
Yeah, he changes the game. Like in a way where you're like, yo, I think they got to start
going
through
guy,
roles. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
They got to start going through us. Like, even if Rose doesn't start games, but like he's got to be finishing games over Teague. Like, it's to me, it's not even an option now.
Yeah, you know?
Hopefully he maintains his health, but unless that happens, I mean,
it's a good problem to have,
games.
Man. Yeah. It's just put this way. It's a good problem to have competitiveness and depth on your squad, especially at the point guard position.
Yeah. Like, another point, though, I'm just going to say, like, he's the only NBA player coming off the bench with his own signature shoe line from a major company. And
at
this pace, you may want to capitalize this season even further instead of looking to drop him. Like, even Carmelo's not getting his own shoe line anymore.
Yeah, wow, Carmelo, wow.
You know? Oh, that's another story. It's funny. I was going to hit you with, who's the most disappointing player? I wouldn't say him. I think it's funny. I think even though he's on another team right now, I think the way Butler handled that whole situation in Minnesota was deplorable. Like, I'd give him that tag for most disappointing player. Not for anything he did on the court, but just the way he handled that whole situation. I just thought it was deplorable.
It was terrible, but he wanted out of there, and he tried to – he didn't care how he did it.
Clearly not.
that was bad. But I don't know. Like, there's – it's like, it's so funny. He still did what he did. He didn't care what anyone thought about him. And you got to give him, you got to respect him for that one. But definitely, I agree with you on that one. There's a certain level of professionalism, and he didn't show none of that.
Oh, he threw that out the window. You know what it reminds me of? You remember that episode of Fresh Prince when he was acting on some soap and he wanted to quit the show? So he started doing all kinds of craziness until the episode kicked off?
And
then they found out, like, you know, until the end, he finds out that Halle Berry was going to be his
coach. Yeah. He's pissed off.
That to me is kind of like how he handled the situation, you know?
I don't know. Like, I can understand his frustration in the sense of, like, playing with the likes of the young talent of Wiggins and Carl Anthony Towns. But there's a certain level, you got to be a leader, you got to understand. He has an old school mentality. Like, he's like, you gotta put in work, you gotta work hard. He's worked very hard to get to where he is, so I respect from him.
Mm-hmm.
But these kids are from a different breed, and they are weak mentally, and he couldn't handle his brash leadership style, and it just did not work out. It's funny. Since he's been gone, they've been balling out.
I know they've been playing well. So to me, that's. Yeah, I know he's got that old school style, but it's funny because there's a multitude of reasons why you can rip him for it. But I know some of it, a large part has to do with money, because he would have been the third highest player being paired on the team, but expecting him to be the leader. So I know he wasn't jiving with that, but he had a situation twice with Chicago when he beefed with Rose, when Rose was in his prime still, and Noah. And then he had the beef with the young players when him and Wade kind of went and they kind of made their own faction of their squad on Chicago until Rondo had to step in on them. And then he has this situation here for a guy that plays so hard. Like he does, he's definitely like, not, you know, not everybody's meant to be a leader. And I think he's meant to be a great soldier. I don't think he's meant to be the general. You know what I mean? Like just because you play hard doesn't mean you should also be the leader. Not everybody's, you know, is qualified to be tagged with that. I think the last few years he showed you he's not that guy.
He's not that guy, clearly. Yeah.
Not to lead.
Yeah. Leadership is not one of his strong points. I think there's a certain level of maturity that it takes to be a good leader, to get people to follow, to buy into whatever you're trying to get them to follow you. And he did not do a good job of that in Minnesota. That was bad.
That was deplorable, man. Like,
yeah.
You know, to rehash that, it was deplorable. Thank you for listening to part one of the very early NBA season rundown. As always, I appreciate you for lending me your ears. Make sure you look out for part two of the first trimester tomorrow. Should be up and running in about 24 hours. All right, so make sure you stay tuned for that. And Sal Sharaf is available wherever you listen to your podcast. You can go ahead and listen and subscribe to my podcast on Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and last but not least, Apple Podcasts. And to check out my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio. And we'll be back tomorrow. All right? See you then.